The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we're qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week, we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites, guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com for information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about.
Hello.
Well, hey, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well. What a difference a week makes, eh? The weather.
I know. It's absolutely torrential.
The rain today is horrible. We're recording this on Monday and the rain is filthy.
Soggy, isn't it?
Absolutely filthy.
I thought that I'd said goodbye to my jumpers and going out with a jacket, but no.
No such luck. It's an English weather. English summer, you should know by now. We've had enough practice at it, haven't we?
Not good. But I have had a look and I think the warm weather is coming back in about a week and a half.
Oh, okay. Is that on your say-so?
Yeah. Fingers massively crossed.
I love it. Well, let's hope so. I'm hoping it's going to, yeah, I think today and tomorrow, and then I think it's looking like it's supposed to be a little bit better after that.
Oh, God, I hope so.
Gosh, how British are we? Starting an entire podcast with talk about
the weather.
Weather.
Please don't switch off.
How have you been this week?
Yeah, I've been good.
How's your little Lady Who Londons? How's she coming along?
She is good. Her little personality is really starting to come out. I was saying to Alex before we recorded the pod that she has really found her voice. Which is exciting.
Literally and metaphorically.
Yeah, reaching highs that are just like, whoa, God, you know, hide the glass. Because, yeah, it's quite loud.
Brilliant.
But, all good. We took her to see a few family members at the weekend. We did kind of a car journey of about 2 hours there, 2 hours back. And we thought, God, how's this going to go? But she was good. She was good. She handled it. So
amazing. Oh, good. Well, I'm glad she's well. And you're dealing with it all right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah.
I keep having people say to me, I'm surprised Emily's gone straight back into the podcast. I'm like, yeah, let's see how long it lasts. She'll need a break at some point.
It's really lovely, like having a purpose to do a bit of research and, you know, and I love our little weekly get-togethers, Alex. Yeah. So, yeah, it's keeping me going. And she's asleep at the moment. She's right by my side. She's very cozy and content. So
she was very good when I saw her last week. She was very well behaved.
Oh, yes, she had an Alex Lacey cuddle, didn't she?
She did. There was no squealing or anything. Strix babies normally hate me, but yeah.
Oh, no, she loved you. She really did.
Fabulous. Well, this week, welcome back to Ladies Who London podcast, everybody. Last week, what did we talk about?
We spoke about Beatrix Potter.
We did. Loved it. Like I said last week, really fantastic, fascinating, really fascinating and fantastic to find out a bit more about somebody whose books I loved so much when I was a little girl. I really loved them.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, we had some place lovely in my heart. Comments. I still haven't watched Miss Potter. I watched it years ago, but I don't remember.
I've got a terrible memory. I don't remember these things. So I will have to watch it again.
And have you been reading your book, Isabella Bird?
I haven't cracked into it yet. I've not had much time this week. It's been, I don't, where does the time go? Where does the time go? But I'm hoping this week, I haven't got much on this week, so I'm hoping I can spend a little bit of time.
Apart from your birthday.
Yeah, well.
that. Yes, it's Alex's birthday week, everybody. I don't know if she wanted me to put it out there, but it's out there now.
Right, I'll edit this out.
Send any presents or cards or anything. Her address is...
Send them care of you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And give us a written review for Alex's birthday. That'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll take 2 5-star TripAdvisor reviews from everybody. Thank you.
Yeah,
that'll do. yeah, so I've got, yeah, it's mostly kind of birthday-ish stuff this week, but bits and pieces. So I might try and crack into the book soon. The plan was to try and sit and read it this week, and then just like life takes over, doesn't it? And you go, oh, I've got that to do. Oh, and that. Oh, and that.
That really does.
But anyway. Yes, I will crack into that. So we need to clear up podcast pedestal from last week, don't we? Can you remind everybody what the options were? So at the end of the Beatrix Potter episode, we picked our favourite 2 kind of crux points of the story or important bits and asked you to vote on them, to battle them out for this week. So what were they?
So you went for... the nanny. So when Beatrix was growing up in Kensington, she had a nanny who basically pushed her to go into her own imagination and come up with stories, which was a very good one.
Thank you. And you went for the letter, which she wrote to the sick boy, wasn't it?
Yes, and she didn't know what to write, so she decided to write a little story about a rabbit called Peter. Yay. And she had a rabbit called Peter. And this really sparked off her whole entire writing career. I think it was certainly the crux point.
You did the hard sell again. You always did the hard sell afterwards. It's hilarious.
It's unnecessary now. But I know, I mean, you can say this about me. Like, if I think that your choice is much better, I will say it.
Yes. Even if you did get your boyfriend to vote for you.
I didn't get him to vote for me this week. I've just checked and he's given me a bit of a tick and not one that requires an itch. So I think that I think my choice was better, but I think that you've won.
Well, the votes have gone 56% to 43%.
Oh, it's bloody close.
It is pretty close. It's gone to me this time.
Yay! Oh God, I thought so, because I did look at mine. I looked at ours as well.
Oh, you got to stop doing that.
I can't help it. I'm just intrigued.
You're in the element of surprise.
So well done. I mean, thank I guess, you know, it needed her imagination first and foremost to be able to sit down and write the story in the letter. So I guess that's pretty crux worthy.
It's a moral win for you.
Yes.
I love it. Well, so there we go. So what does that make it in?
So that makes it, Alex, 1918 to you.
1918 to me.
Yes.
So we're still, ahead. You know.
We're still very close. We're very close. Yes.
I honestly thought you were going to shoot way ahead of me and do kind of a reverse Alex, which is...
Oh, no. I mean, we, you know, if we're dancing the conga, I'm literally just behind you.
Yeah, but the moves are great, so it's fine. Fine. So this week we are heading over towards Clerkenwell
because we
span the wheel and it's Clerkenwell, and I love Clerkenwell. It's an area that we don't get to guide around too much, but when we do, it's a real treat because there are some absolute gems in Clerkenwell. I think it's one of London's best kept secrets, actually. It's an area that's full of little quirky bits of history and all kinds of stuff. But I picked what used to be very secret mail rail that goes under London. Now, I say very secret because it's less secret now that there's been a museum that opened up just a couple of years ago called the Postal Museum. Have you been?
I haven't, but I have been virtually via your videos.
Via my videos, yeah. I've been a couple of times. I really love it. I'm a real sucker for nerdy, transporty, underground secret stuff like this. So when I mean, I heard about the railway years ago, and when I heard that the museum was happening, I think I went in the first week. It was so exciting. So I wanted to have a little look at the mail rail, because not a lot of people know it. Not a lot of people know that it's there, and it's really, really fascinating. What do you know about it? Is there anything?
I don't really know much about it at all, to be honest.
Well,
I've got the visual in my mind, and it just, oh, I don't know, it conjures up all sorts of, don't put this in, Alex, I'm struggling here. Ask me again.
Okay. Do you know anything about it?
Not really.
Oh, I'm leaving all of that in. I'm leaving it in. That's too good. Well, let me tell you. So the mail rail. Now, what's quite interesting is mail has always been very important for, you know, especially the time when Brits are going around the world and, you know, creating this empire and all this sort of stuff. Now, I'm not going to go into the pros and cons of the empire and let's say largely cons, but what I am going to say is that, you know, mail has always been very important because it's the way of being able to communicate at long distances. You know, of course, before telephones and even telegraphs and things like that, mail was a big deal, and especially even just around the country, getting word from, you know, if you think back to battles and this, that and the other, the kings on battlefields would have messengers who they would give a message to, and that messenger would just ride hell for leather across the countryside mm-hmm. to get the message back to the homeland that they'd lost or they'd won or whatever it might be, because there's no other way of doing it. So they just had to just set out and go for it. And so we kind of see this development of mail, which is used to convey firstly important information and then, you know, letters and news and all this sort of stuff. And mail originally used to be done with carriages and horses coming across the countryside. Particularly, you sort of think about these mail carriages that are kind of coming through all the, you know, from Cornwall across the country and up into London. Because, of course, London is in the southeast and it's the capital. It's always been a hub for mail sorting and all this sort of thing. But we start to see this changing a little bit as the Industrial Revolution comes in and we get trains and steam power and all of this. And carriages kind of stop doing the mail run across the country because it's not, you know, it's taking a long time. It's not very profitable anymore. And they switch to doing it in trains going across the country. And you might have seen kind of old Wild West movies where you've got the train sort of rocketing along the track and they get to this one point and they have to drop off a sack of mail. And rather than stop and drop it off, they just keep going. And there's a sort of like a boom arm that's stuck out and it catches with a net and it catches a bag of mail that is going from the train, or equally the train will catch the bag of mail onto it as well.
So they just literally chuck it out.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even get somebody doing it necessarily. You get, well, actually, you sort of do, you need somebody on the train to sort it all. But the bag would be hanging on this boom arm and the train collects it. Or you hang the mail on the boom arm of the train and then it gets sort of caught on a hook and it goes into a big, like a sort of sack, really, that you can then, which is really quite a clever way of doing it. So this means that mail starts to become faster and faster and faster. And in London, of course, we need to get mail all over the city, and it's a huge city. But the problem we have is that it's being transported by road all around the city. Roads are getting busier, the carriages are getting larger, they're making way for motor cars, and suddenly we get up against huge amounts of congestion. So we get to the mid-1800s, so the Victorian era, when, you know, it's the height of discovery and invention and all this kind of stuff. And so we're going to get to the mail rail very shortly, because this is obviously they decide that a railway is the best way to do it. But there is a thing that they trial, and it goes on for about 15 years or so. It's not that long, which was a sort of a rail thing. It didn't quite go the same length as the mail rail we're going to talk about. What would you imagine would be the most sort of I guess modern or crazy sort of way of the Victorians thinking about how to, you know, get something through a tunnel, a small tunnel? What do you imagine?
Oh God, well, to get something for a small tunnel. I mean, could you fit a horse down there?
Nope, we're talking, actually some of these tunnels are only about 80 centimeters wide, so no, definitely not necessarily
Oh,
tiny
so
horse.
maybe like, I don't know, are we bringing back the idea of carrier pigeons?
Nope.
Just give it to a little boy and hope for the best. Run, young man,
Well, no, we're
run.
talking about Victorians, and they, you know, the way that they look. I always think that this is something that, if you've ever watched Chitty Chitty Bang Bang,
Yes.
the dad in it, Caractacus Potts or Crackpot, you
Yes.
know how he just creates all sort of weird and wonderful stuff. I imagine that this is something that he created. It was essentially a tunnel, a very small tunnel. It didn't run for very far, but it was one that you would put these little capsules in, and they would use either a vacuum system or a massive fan at the end to basically just propel these carriages with mail along.
Oh my
So
gosh.
you're just like pinging it through through these tunnels, which either you've got this sort of you have this kind of vacuum thing with a fan at the end that is dragging the air through and therefore creating a vacuum and essentially sucking it along the length of this tube, or a massive fan that is turned on and pushing it through the tube.
God, the amount of energy that it would have taken to power that. With the fan going. So sorry, can you say how big was this tunnel? Can
Well,
you
so
say
they
how?
started out quite small. They started out about 80 centimeters wide, and then they got a little bit bigger. But
80
realistically,
centi Oh God, bloody hell, you definitely couldn't fit a horse down there.
no, absolutely not. But what you could fit down there, and this is what I think is absolutely hilarious, and when they became slightly bigger, the only thing is they're supposed to be carriages that you put mail in, and they look like a kind of. Almost like a bit like a bobsleigh, you know, that sort of almost
Oh
bullet-shaped
yes.
thing. And you'd pop it in and it would fill it with mail and you'd sling it along this thing. Of course, a few daredevils decided it would be great to have a go in it. And occasionally you would get people who would hop into this thing and basically get propelled along this
God,
tunnel.
that is so scary because what if it suddenly just stopped halfway through
Well,
and,
this is what
you
could
know,
sometimes happen if the vacuum went,
oh.
the thing could stop and someone would have to crawl in and like grab the chariot and like pull it with a rope or something. The best thing is there's a story about a woman who got in there, crinoline and all, you know, those huge big skirts, and was propelled along the entire length and got out at the end. She was absolutely fine, and you know, barely a crease to her crinoline or something. Just hilarious. So
Jesus.
they are completely, they're trialing this and they're thinking this is a really good way of getting mail around, but it actually doesn't last very long, and then it folds, and even within, you know, 25 years it's known as the secret railway there. So we move on to the early 1900s, and they've kind of tested this and they think, well, okay, maybe that's not quite going to work on a big scale, but it's a great idea. And so they decide that instead of having all of the mail go around the streets and create congestion, because, you know, a huge amount of mail coming in. We're talking about the Victorian era in post-industrial revolution. There's lots of mail going everywhere. You know, there's big business happening, and London is a big hub for all of these things going on, as well as the business. So they
And
think,
even
right.
just, I guess, connecting and communicating with family members, because obviously, it's not like today where you can quickly ping a message over, but love
Exactly.
letters to sweethearts and, pen pals.
All of that, and you know, this is when we've had the first paid post. The penny post has come in, so it means that people can now do this, and it's a lovely thing that people do. And we're talking about the very early 1900s, so also First World War. So we're talking about mail going to the front to soldiers and back to family. So there's an awful lot being shifted. And so they think, right, well, we need to get it off the roads. So let's take that idea that we had and create an underground railway, which is what they do. And it's only about 6.5 miles long. So it's not huge, but it goes from Paddington all the way to Whitechapel. And it has about, I think it's about nine stations along the route. And at each of the stations is a sorting office above. So the stations are below ground, as is the mail. Now, the mail rail goes down about 21 meters, which I think is about 70 feet, something like that. So it's, you know, it's fairly down there. The stations are a little bit higher, so they're not on ground level, but they are up a little bit from the level of the railway line. And this is for two reasons. Firstly, it means that you are slightly closer to the surface, therefore easier to hoik all this stuff up. But secondly, these trains can run at up to about 40 miles an hour. at top speed. They probably wouldn't often be going quite that well. I don't actually know. They might have been. But as they're coming in, they want to minimise the amount of time that they have in these stations to make sure that everything is running really quickly. So as you come to the station, the railway line goes up, which means that it automatically slows down. And as you leave, it then dips down again, which means you automatically speed up.
Speed up. Yeah. Wow. And where it's stopping, I mean, are these stations that they created just for the postal service, or are they actually stopping at stations that already exist?
Well, they were stopping underneath big sorting stations. So like Mount Pleasant. So Mount Pleasant still exists, but most of them have gone. We'll come back to that in a second. But essentially, it's a way of getting mail across the city, and it could be done in under 30 minutes, which is shaving literally hours off the time it takes to get the mail across London. So this is a massive, massive deal, and it's really successful. And it was opened in 1927, and always, this was never this amazing kind of hydraulic, vacuum-powered thing. This was always an electric railway. And it was always driverless. In fact, this is the first driverless train in the world.
Even before the DLR,
absolutely. So there's no drivers on, but what you do have is a huge cadre of staff who are working in the different sorting places. And when the trains come into the stations, they have a very, very short window of time to get the mail off and get the new bags of mail on before it then heads on to the next station. So it's a really, really big amount of people that are required to make this work. And it would work. Now, this is what I find quite funny. It would work for 22 hours a day. I don't know why it didn't work for 24. Just 22 hours a day. There's 2 hours where the actual rail needs a rest. I don't know.
Yeah, especially because if you don't have a driver. Yeah, it's a weird time, isn't it?
22 hours a day. Yeah. It's just really bizarre. It absolutely cut the times going from west to east and vice versa. So really, really successful. And it went on all the way to, actually, I'm going to ask you, when do you think it closed down?
So what was it, 1927? I reckon it was going for a good 30 years.
2003, it shut down.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The final bits of it. Yeah. Which is actually rather impressive. And the reason it did shut down is very simply because a lot of the sorting stations moved. A lot of them moved. There's things about two that are in the same place now. And it was also said that the company who ran it, well, the Royal Mail, said that it was five times more expensive to do that than it was to do it on the roads. Now, of course, it hadn't been originally. And the workers down there disputed that. They said actually it was more like three times the amount. And they said that there were things that went into it, that there were decisions being made which meant that it was more expensive. But nonetheless, in 2003, it was decided it was too expensive and they were going to shut it down. But it had seen a really impressive, very long life and seen a whole variety of things. So World War II, it was happening as well during the time that it was open. And in 1943, a section of one of the bits of the rail actually got hit by a bomb in 1943. And the Mail Rail were very proud of the fact that they were up and running again the very next day. Classic Blitz spirit.
Good for them. Good
they were like,
for
come
them.
On, come on, chaps, off we go.
So they need their mail.
They really do. And so that, yeah, they were just the next day, they're like, come on, we'll get it working. And they did. Wow. There was even an incident where, now we've spoken about this pesky river, the Fleet River before.
Oh, yeah.
Very early on. And the Fleet River broke in through one of the walls at one point as well. So it's had its challenges in the past. But now it is completely empty and no trains are, well, I say no trains are running. No mail trains are running anymore. Now, the mail trains themselves are quite small. The tunnels, they're usually, in most places, they are single file tunnels. And you go through and the tunnels are really quite small. And if you sort of, so when, if you go to the mail rail, you can travel in these mail trains as you go through. And when you're sitting in it, there is a glass roof that goes over you, which wouldn't have been there originally. But the tunnel is just outside of that. So you are, you know, a couple of inches away from the tunnel wall. So it's really quite small.
Oh, wow. Very impressive. Because I remember, I'm visualising your video and it almost looks like, you know, you're in a kind of in a plane and you've got the glass kind of curve over you and you're looking up. And it's quite tight in there. Can you fit anyone to the left or right, or is
No,
it just all
it's one
singular?
single person. You have somebody in front and behind and that kind of thing. But no, it's a one person seat. You could
Wow.
probably squish like two toddlers or something in next to each other. But no, other than that, it is the width of, one person essentially.
Oh,
Yeah, I
and
was.
was it?
You said it's a bit like a plane. I imagine it a bit like a glider, which I've been in once before and was similar in sort of size. Yeah, that sort of, tube-like effect. Yeah.
And did it go 40 miles per hour when you were on it?
No, went about 6 miles an hour.
I was be like, this is a very quick experience, but an experience nonetheless.
No, sadly it wasn't quite that fast, but it could have. Yeah, when it was working, and when it was working, it would transfer about 4 million pieces of mail per day when it was at its peak in the 1930s. So, yeah, huge amount of mail. So when they closed it down, it became one of the most sort of favored places for urbexers to go and break in. Now, do you know what an urbexer is?
Oh, is this another one of your words?
No, it's not another
Bexter.
word. Urbexer. So an urbexer is somebody,
Bexter.
it's short for urban explorer, and it's
Oh.
people who go and break into disused or dilapidated places, things that are closed off, places you can't normally get into, to go and take a look and take some pictures and, record it. And that's what a lot of people were doing, making their way into this 6.5 miles of tunnels, and kind of going, because it's quite an exciting thing to go and do. And it was decided that rather than leave them empty, they were going to make it into this amazing mail rail with the Postal Museum. So when you go there, and I should say, this is not, we're not supported by them in any way, shape, or form. It's just one of my favourite museums. And if they're listening and they want to sponsor us, I'd be very happy to hear their offer on that. I just absolutely love it because it's such a really cool thing to be able to go through the tunnels. And when you do this, you can see there's a whole load of stuff. They do take you into one of these old abandoned stations, so you can kind of see what it was like. And they use really good sort of sound and light projections on the wall to show you the kind of things that were going on. But one of my favorite things in there is the train graveyard. And if trains were, too old, too decrepit to work anymore, or even just at the end when the whole thing closed down, they just sidled them off into little sidings and just bricked them up and left them there. And
Oh,
there's a
how
couple of,
sad.
I know, there's a couple of little train graveyards you can see as you go, but it's really rather lovely. And it was done, that the tunnel was cut using exactly the same method as the London Underground or the Tube, which is the Henry
Oh,
Greathead Shield
yeah.
format, which we're not going to go into today, but maybe that's a chat for another day. Done exactly the same way on a smaller scale, because of course the tunnels are a lot smaller. And so the same thing when these cutters, and this is what happens with the tube. I don't know if you know this, but with the tube, when they finish cutting these things, they just turn them sideways into the wall and make them kind of dig their own grave and then leave them there. It's really sad.
Oh, bloody
They did that with
hell.
the Channel Tunnel as well. They just sort of get them to go on an angle, bury themselves in, and that's it. Poor thing.
Gosh, see you later.
I know.
Did you stop at every station?
No, oh no, absolutely not. No, you just when you do a little loop of the
Okay.
tour. Yes, when the mail rail was working, yes, you would have gone to every
You would
station.
have, but
But
on the
now you
tour
do
that you
one
did.
station, do a little loop, and it goes from Mount Pleasant, which is just on the corner of Clerkenwell, which is where the Postal Museum is. But there are still tunnels that are still empty that people don't have access to, but they are still there. And there was talk about making some of them into an events venue. I've not heard any more about that lately, but that is maybe worth keeping an eye on. So for many years, we heard talk about this wonderful secret little railway underneath London that nobody really, apart from the odd urbexer, had ever seen. And so when it came to opening it up, oh, it was so much fun. And one of my favorite things, so you can go and do the train, and then over the road they have a really great museum with loads and loads of stories and bits and pieces about the history of mail and all of that. And one of the things they do is they have one of those vacuum, not the vacuum that we talked about earlier, but the kind of vacuum things that you used to have at banks when you were younger. And you put the little capsule in, and it vacuums over to the other side, and you can happily spend one person on each end of it telling jokes for hours on end, which is rather fun. But it's a really, really good museum. I really recommend it. And that's just a little bit about the mail rail in London, the secret.
Gosh, I need to do this. How much was it? I mean, you went on for free, did you?
No, I paid. I think it's around £16, I think, from memory. I need to double check, but yeah, but if you want to go, you have to book, especially at the minute, you need to book a slot to be on the train, because the train can't take many people. So you need to, even in normal times, you could go whenever you wanted, but you had sort of, when you got there, you know, put yourself down for a particular time. So very good to book in advance so that you can get on a particular train.
Fantastic. When you're in Mount Pleasant, is it quite obvious where it is? Is there a sign kind of directing you to it and down?
There are a few signs. Then it's not the most obvious, but as you come up on the west, so if you're coming up to, you've got Clerkenwell on the right hand side, if you're looking at a map, and you've got Mount Pleasant in the middle, and then it's on the left hand side of Mount Pleasant just as you go up that road there. So it's fairly okay to find, if you sort of know vaguely where you're looking.
Oh, I definitely need to do it. Would you be up for doing it again? Oh, I know you've already done it twice. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because nice. I guess you feel like you're, I don't know, almost about to go on a roller coaster ride, because yeah. You've got this, you know, someone in front of you, someone behind, and then off you go.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. And actually, the tunnels there, so I mentioned that, you know, because they're quite low below ground. During the Second World War, you know how often when we go to the National Gallery and the Tate and we talk about the fact that pieces of art were moved and stored in salt mines in Wales and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Some of them were stored down here in the tunnels to protect them from the bombing raids.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
And there's been Hollywood movies that have been shot down there. The most famous one is one called Hudson Hawk, which had Bruce Willis in it.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was the, it was sort of acting as the Vatican's own private railway station under the ground, which is kind of fun. So they're quite big on that. And what's really good, so when you go in there and you go into the station, they have all these amazing sort of, light projections on the wall, which show you all about it. It's really, really good. And just rather lovely little thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah, what a wonderful secret hidden gem in London.
Yeah.
Love that.
And I should say, actually, I said 6.5 miles across London, which is true, although actually there's 22 miles of track.
Okay, 22 miles of track.
Distance it's stretched, but, you know, you've got a couple of double tracks and, you know, bits and pieces and sidings and stuff. So 22 miles in total, but it covers a sort of 6.5 mile journey across London.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
So nearly, about 80 years, almost 80 years of this fantastic little rare, you know, train just sort of tootling along under our feet. But you'd be surprised how miniature the rail actually is. Now, they keep talking about this Hyperloop that Elon Musk has mooted, which is supposedly some kind of link that he's going to do between, I think, LA and San Francisco, which is a sort of vacuum thing, which is going to make you get from LA to San Francisco really quickly. And so these guys have done it like 100 years before him, or 150 years before him, in the mid-1800s. The Victorians did this. So Elon Musk is nothing new. Just hilarious.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Alex. That was absolutely wonderful.
A little bit about the lovely secret, or not so secret anymore, mail rail that used to go under London. There we go.
And I can't believe that it was still going up until 2003.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things they have in part of the museum, well, actually, I think it's in the bit when you come out of the train and there's a little bit before you go into the museum, they have the lockers of some of the last people to have worked on it. So it's as if they put their stuff down on the last day and then left them, and then, you know, the lockers are there with their kit and all sorts.
And it's been left a little bit like Churchill War Rooms, where
it does
people
feel a
left
bit like
the
that
papers and pen for the meeting that never happened.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
And there we go.
Gosh, thank you very much, Alex.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
podcast pedestal.
So what are you going to go for your podcast pedestal?
I think I know, actually.
I bet.
No, do you want to go first? You always let me go first. You go first.
Okay. What do I want to go for? I think I'm going to go for the lady in her crinoline.
That's a great one.
In the
I love that it's a woman as well, in her big dress. Yeah. Totally up for it.
Just going, come on, let me at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go for the woman in her crinoline.
Because I would have loved to hear the conversations of, you know, who was going to go through and... maybe her husband was there and was daring her on, hoping she'd get stuck.
I like the idea that her friends were there going, go on, you can
go. Do you want to take your crinoline off? No, keep it on.
Absolutely. So I think that's going to be my pick. So even though it was the precursor to the actual male rail that we know and love, I just think it's fantastic. And this the ingenuity of these Victorians, which laid the way for the Edwardians to then start on creating this male rail.
Wow. Okay. That's a brilliant one.
What are you going for?
I'm going to go for the fact that after it was bombed, the very next day, they're up and running again, because I think it shows the resilience and the love for the male, realising that, especially during World War II, it is important for people to get those letters of, hope and... they might be sent to someone that is really needing some kind of support.
That's funny. I very nearly went for that one. I think it's a great choice.
Great, thank you.
I think it's going to be a tough one this week.
Yes, I do. So hopefully, people will vote for me.
Oh, you're so wonderfully measured in your.
I think so.
Please vote for me. So there we go. Those are your options. It's the daredevil lady in her crinoline, or it is the World War II bomb where they pick themselves up and dust themselves off and open the very next day. I think two good choices for you there.
Two very good choices. I'd like to think that there was some kind of, image, maybe sketch made of that woman shooting through the tunnel.
There is. And when you go to the museum, they do have a little, I don't even think they know necessarily who it is. I don't even think that her name has gone down in history. I might be wrong about that, but there definitely is a little sketch of somebody doing it, so they can kind of show you, her jumping into the thing, which is just hilarious.
Brilliant. Love that. And it must have been so nice as well, knowing that you went through it, to think, oh my God, this woman whooshed through. I mean, I shouldn't really be talking about it so much because I really want you to choose my option. But,
yeah, of course. Well, she didn't whoosh through that bit. She whooshed through the pneumatic bit, which was elsewhere, but still. So there we go. That's it for this week. What have you got coming up? The question that you hate me asking because you just keep saying nothing much.
Well, no, and I'm okay with that. You know, I did actually do a walking tour, a street art tour on the weekend.
Yes, you did.
2 hours whipped around. Yeah. So yeah, not much on.
Are you doing any other walking tours people can come on?
I do have 2 walking tours for August.
Woo!
I know, it's just Rotherhithe. So if anyone wants me to take them around Rotherhithe, I've got one on Sunday the 15th of August at 11 a.m. and then one the following Sunday, which is the 22nd of August. £15 per person, and they can book on my website guideemily.com or at the londontourgroup.com.
Fantastic.
And you?
Well, I have nothing this weekend because I am birthdaying at my folks. But the following weekend, I have 4 public walks in the diary. I have a Westminster. Well, no, actually, it's London of the Silver Screen. So it's movie locations in and around London, which is one of my faves. That's going to be around Westminster. Nice. I've also got a Blood and Guts and Body Snatching in Smithfields, which is on the 4th of July in the afternoon. And then I'm running 2 walks for London Walks, which is Street Art and My Black Londoners. So if anybody wants to come on any of those. And then dates are up now. So dates are up for all the way through August. We've got some Women of Westminster, some Harlots. We've got some street art, all sorts of stuff. So plenty there to come and join in. Yay!
The Wheel of Destiny.
So, it's time for your favourite bit.
Time for the wheel.
Yep.
So there are a few things that I would like to talk about. So there are a few things on my list in terms of events, because I feel like I've chosen quite a few people recently.
Okay.
So hopefully the wheel will land where I want it to. But yep. As always, let's go with the flow.
Yeah.
Harmon's going to help me. With her little finger. She's totally awake now. Ready.
Loving
to
it. Roll. Loving it.
Ready for the wheel. Okay. Off we go. Harmon, go. Loving it.
Good spinning, Carmen. Well done.
Yeah, well done, Carmen. Oh my God. Okay, people are actually going to think that this is not real because we keep on landing in the same place over and over.
We haven't done Clerkenwell again.
We are. We are in
fixing this, Emily. Again. I can't see the wheel. I'm sure you fixed it.
Although, I don't think we've been in Clerkenwell before this session. So.
No, I don't. I think you're right. I don't think we have. Well, anyway.
But that's fine, because as you said, there's so much to talk about, because you've got the well itself.
Fascinating.
You've got the church there, St. James's Church, which is really beautiful, got quite a rich history.
All the different things. Wood.
Yeah. But And do you know about the Clerkenwell explosion?
I do not.
Okay.
Oh, so we're going goth there.
It's a little bit goth, guys. I haven't gone to the dark side for a while.
No,
I mean, it was Beatrix Potter last week, for heaven's sake. Yeah. So, yes, the Clerkenwell explosion is all about a prison that used to be in the area, known as the House of Detention. So, yes, I'm going to tell you all about this explosion.
Oh, exciting. All right.
Bang, bang. Boom, boom.
Blood and guts and gore again. Fantastic. Yeah. We haven't had that for a while.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to that for next week. Thank you so much, Emily and Carmen. Thank you for your sterling work in spinning the wheel and screaming through most of our recording.
She's drunk on milk now.
It'll be a delight to edit. I can't wait.
Thanks for sticking with it, guys.
Yep, and we'll see you next week for all sorts of explosive fun. Hey,
beautiful. Well, happy birthday as well, Alex.
Thanks. Yeah. All right, take care, everyone. We'll see you next week. Bye,
bye guys.